This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello and welcome to today's Positive Parenting Show. I'm Armin Brott. Across America, particularly among adults under 33, secularism is on the rise. Nearly a third of millennials, that's people who were born in about 1980 and beyond, don't identify with a particular religion. And 20% of Americans overall describe themselves as non-religious. So what happens when a non-believer falls in love with a believer? Well, if you ask most traditional pastors and rabbis, they'll tell you, major religious differences make a marriage much more difficult if it doesn't doom it all together. Imagine the problems and the odds stacked against a long, happy marriage when one partner is committed to an organized faith and the other is committed to agnosticism or being an atheist. Now imagine the potential for a mixed belief marriage where partners embrace their differences and work out agreements on shared practices and focus on their shared values. Well, according to my guest for this part of today's show, mixed belief marriages can be highly successful and deeply fulfilling. In fact, contrary to all those naysayers' assertions, mixed belief marriages have just as much chance of succeeding as any other marriages between two independent people. And that could very well be cause for celebration. I'm Armin Brott. We'll talk about why some mixed belief marriages succeed and others fail when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough. Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest. A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Dale McGowan, who's the author of In Faith and In Doubt, How Religious Believers and Non-Believers Can Create Strong Marriages and Loving Families. Dale, thanks for coming back on the show.
Good to be with you, Armin. Thanks.
You were here a couple of years ago talking about parenting beyond belief.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Let's get a couple of definitions down before we get too far into this. When you're talking about religious believers and non-believers, there seems to be a lot of gray area. There are people who identify religiously, but there are people who just kind of have a cultural religious identity, or they say that they're spiritual but not religious. I mean, how are you defining religious or believers?
Well, it's really however the people in the marriage define it. If you have two people who are defining their positions differently from each other, if one is saying I'm religious and the other saying I'm non-religious, there are issues that tend to come up. And in many cases, the issues will be very minor for the reasons that you just described. In some cases, it's a very non-doctrinaire, non-dogmatic religion, or an atheist who is not anti-religious. Those are situations in which there aren't going to be a lot of tensions. So the definitions are things that I really leave to the people in the marriages.
Okay. But there can be, it sounds like, kind of almost extreme versions of atheism as well. I mean, they can be very militant atheists, or, as you're saying, some who are not particularly antagonistic or not antagonistic at all.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, there's a wide range, and unfortunately, the antagonistic atheists get a lot of the media play for natural reasons. It's controversial and conflict. The technical term that's used there is anti-theist, an atheist who defines him or herself in terms of an opposition to religion and a feeling that everything about religion is poisonous and undesirable. And obviously that's not a person who's typically going to bring a lot of positives to a relationship with a religious person. But you're absolutely right. There's the same extreme on the atheist side as there is on the religious side.
Okay. So these people are going to meet somewhere, and you know, religion doesn't always come up in the very beginning of a conversation, or be, you know, even may not even come up over the first couple dates, particularly if you have kind of a tiny little kernel of a sense that that could be a problem. Because, you know, people, you like somebody, you don't want to start off with a big fight, right?
So, oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that's one that can often be a big fight.
Yeah, it's right. So I think people almost deliberately or maybe subconsciously avoid even having the conversations, particularly if they're attracted to somebody. You don't want to fight.
Yeah, it's true, and that can be a real problem. Part of the difficulty is that when you're first starting out in a relationship, a lot of times you're not serious enough to get into that level of discussion. And once you are serious enough and are really committed to each other, then you're afraid to get into
exactly.
the conversation
exactly.
because you're afraid of what the outcome might be. And I can't stress enough that it's essential to go there anyway. Once you realize that you're headed in a serious toward a serious commitment, you really have to make a commitment to having this conversation as early as possible.
And how do you do that? What do you start off with? Hey, I'm Catholic, or hey, what religion are you? I mean,
right.
you go see a movie?
Yeah, it's much more common for the religious person to already be known in the relationship because that has a tendency to be, to have outward expressions of practice and so on. So it's very frequently the non-religious person, and that was certainly the case in my marriage and in my pre-marriage when we were dating. And I simply had to get the gumption, and that's what it amounts to, that you have to say, look, there's something that I want to talk about because I think it's very important for us to be honest about, you know, things that could potentially affect the relationship. And I simply said to my wife, I am an atheist. I am a non-believer, and it's something I've actually thought about quite a lot. It's not a casual position of mine. It's something that, you know, I've explored quite a bit. And is that okay with you? I mean, is that something that's going to be a problem with us? Because she was a Southern Baptist and, you know, church going and praying and Bible reading, and this was a significant part of her identity. And I was, frankly, terrified at that point because I knew that this is the person that I wanted to spend my life with. I knew that. But I also knew that entering a relationship like this under false pretenses would be absolutely wrong, and it would only plant seeds for trouble later on.
You know, I want to go back just a little bit to the definition of atheist in particular, because it seems to me like there's two separate issues. There's whether you believe in a Jesus or a Moses or a Muhammad, I guess, that could be on one side, or whether you believe that there is life after death kind of a thing, you know what I mean? Whether you believe in the God part of it, because, I mean, like Dawkins is one of the big guys who talks a lot about this, the lack of evidence that there is God. And those things, somehow in my mind, I could be wrong, you could straighten me out on this, but they just seem to be different about whether there's a God or whether you go along with the teachings of a particular religion, because you can do one without the other.
Oh, you absolutely can. And one of the things that I think is important to recognize is that you can have every imaginable combination. And this is one of the things I talk about a great deal in the book, is helping to understand the incredible spectrum of belief and disbelief, and the fact that people come at these issues from all sides and in all different intensities. And so, yes, you can have someone who says, I don't believe there's an afterlife, but I do believe that there is some sort of supernatural power. Or somebody who says, I don't believe there's a supernatural power, but I believe that somehow we come back, reincarnation or something like that. Every imaginable situation and combination is there. And different combinations lead to different strengths and challenges in relationships. Typically, if you have someone who is very dogmatic about a system of belief, again, whether it's religious or non-religious, they're very dogmatic about it, which means, quite simply, not willing to consider the possibility that they're wrong. That's something that leads to a lot of tension and conflict in these relationships. But if you have people with any combination of those beliefs, and they're willing to simply have stated or implied in what they say and think, I could be wrong, then that's the opening for a lot of good things in a relationship.
If you're saying I could be wrong, doesn't that kind of put everybody into the category of agnostic instead of actually saying that I've got a particular religious affiliation?
Yeah, it actually does put most people in the category of agnostic. It's actually fairly rare to have someone on either side. I mean, it's at least more rare than people think to have someone on either side saying that I'm absolutely certain. But if someone says I'm an atheist, what they're saying is I'm confident in my opinion. But I frankly have never met an atheist, and I know hundreds and hundreds of atheists. I've never met anyone who says there is no possibility that I'm wrong. So most atheists are agnostics, and actually most of the people I know who are religious are willing to say, you know, I could be wrong. I don't think I am. My faith is very strong, but I could be wrong. So yes, agnosticism is a healthy thing, I think, regardless of the confidence of your position.
Sounds like it. Are there particular combinations that work or particular kind of character traits that work to make a believer-non-believer marriage more successful than others?
Really, the biggest one is that dogmatic idea, the willingness to say that you might be wrong. Another one is your attitude toward, if you're coming from the religious perspective, your attitude toward salvation. If you have something of a universalist bent, meaning you think that someone other than people of your belief can go to heaven, then you are much more likely to succeed in these relationships. And actually, the significant majority of Americans of all religious perspectives, nearly 80%, believe that someone of a faith other than their own can go to heaven. And nearly half, actually 49% of Catholics and 46% of mainline Protestants think that an atheist can go to heaven, in total violation of the doctrines of their churches. But I think it's important to recognize that individuals can depart that far from their doctrines. They can still seriously consider themselves to be religious people and practice the faith and still think, I don't think God would operate that way. And that's a tremendous opening in a relationship. And from the atheist side, it has to do with your respect for a person who is religious. If you cannot respect a person who's religious, if you think that someone has to be unintelligent in order to be religious, you're not going to succeed in this kind of relationship. You have to be open to the recognition that there are intelligent and respectable people of all beliefs.
I'm speaking with Dale McGowan, who's the author of In Faith and In Doubt, How Religious Believers and Non-Believers Can Create Strong Marriages and Loving Families. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking to Dale.
Excuse me, do you know how to get to Maine and Maple?
How's that cooked?
How do you change the ringtone?
How much does this cost?
Does this bus stop at Elm Street?
We ask questions everywhere in life, except...
Any questions?
No.
At the doctor's office, ask questions.
What is this test for?
Are there any side effects?
Questions lead to better health care. Go to ahrq.gov for a list of 10 questions everyone should know. Questions are the answer. Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the U.S. and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the U.S. Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
My name's Tyler, and in 9 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. But my parents won't start talking to me about it till high school.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
Thing is, my parents won't even see it coming.
So start talking before they start drinking. To learn more, go to StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dale McGowan, who's the author of In Faith and In Doubt, How Religious Believers and Nonbelievers Can Create Strong Marriages and Loving Families. Now, we've talked about marriage using that particular word. Do you find that a non-marriage, but people who have decided to live together in a committed sort of way, that that makes much of a difference? Or, I mean, in other words, is there something specific to marriage that, that creates issues? Or is it just the coming together of two people from different views?
Well, I think I tried to pitch the book really toward any committed relationship. Once you've decided between the two of you that you are in a long-term committed relationship, then I really do think the question of having actually sealed it with a formal marriage ceremony or certificate is really inconsequential. I think the issues are very much the same. And, you know, if someone is in a committed relationship, stays together, in some cases has children, all the same issues are going to come up regardless of the presence of that certificate.
Now, you've got a section of the book called Meet the Issues. Talk about some of those. The ceremony, for example, I mean, that can be a big thing. I mean, if, you know, there's sort of the stereotypical fascination that girls have with white dresses and a big wedding and all that kind of stuff. And I would imagine that that a lot of that has to do with the facility or the building that this whole fancy white dress thing is going to be taken care of or taken place in. And that's usually a church, big cathedral of some kind, and that means that somebody's going to be officiating. So how do you come up with, how do you have the discussions about how that's going to happen? Because there could be not necessarily religious significance placed on it, but just sort of the cultural part of it.
Oh, sure. Well, what you have to do with all of these discussions, including the wedding, is recognize that you both bring negotiables and non-negotiables to the relationship in many different ways. And to recognize those in yourself as well. And there were things for me from the beginning that were perfectly negotiable to me. I went to church with my wife for many years in the beginning of the marriage. That was something that was fine with me. My kids went to Sunday school. They went to a Lutheran preschool. All of these things were negotiable to me. Now that I wanted to be sure that the preschool was of a certain kind, that they weren't going to be scared with hellfire and brimstone and that sort of thing. But just understanding that you both bring, you don't bring a set of absolute firm, hard and fast rules. You bring some things that are non-negotiable, but others that you can talk about. And it's the same with the wedding. For me, my wife wanted to have a traditional religious wedding. And I thought that was just fine. It was perfectly fine, partly because at that point in my life, my atheism wasn't so much of a defining feature in my life. I was just as much an atheist as I am now, but I was a musician at that time. I had actually just finished graduate school in music. I was about to go into the profession, and I would have been much more offended by a wedding with bad music than one with, you know, Bible readings and religious songs. So we had a very straightforward traditional wedding. We had a Methodist minister, Baptist bride, an Episcopal organist in a Lutheran church. I mean, it was just as religious as it could be. And I didn't care at all because I was actually in charge of the music for the ceremony. And so what you find people doing is learning enough about themselves to see what it is that matters most to them and what is non-negotiable to them. And they end up being able to have you could have a wedding that is entirely religious. It could be entirely secular. There are absolutely beautiful secular ceremonies available. Or it could be a mix of the two. And this is something that couples, more often than not, are able to actually work out just fine. In the survey that I did for the book, the tension around the wedding ceremony was actually fairly low. Most people did not have the kind of tension that I expected. Over nearly 1,000 people I talked to, most of them didn't have the kind of tension I expected around the wedding ceremony. They were able to work those details out just fine.
Now, what happens over the course of a relationship when things change? I mean, you know, you're going to have this big discussion about religion, and that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a discussion about what happens when kids show up or what happens when you're going to have joint family kinds of things where the parents or in-laws or brothers or sisters might not have the same open-mindedness. And over the course of time, people change. Is there some kind of a strategy that couples are using to keep having this discussion over and over again and check in with each other to make sure that we're still okay about things?
Well, this is one of the most interesting things that I uncovered in the research for the book. People talk about mixed belief marriages as bringing nothing but problems and challenges. But there's actually one really large, more than one, but there's one particularly large benefit to a mixed belief marriage. It turns out that researchers have found these couples excel at something called dyadic consensus, which is the ability of a couple to come to agreement on issues that are important in the relationship. And they show a much higher level of skill in those conversations and in the ability to sort those things out than couples of the same faith. And the researchers think that this is, frankly, because they have to. Right out of the gate, a mixed belief couple has this difference that they've got to deal with. They've got to talk about it. It's right there. And they sort these very complicated things out. Well, what that becomes is a habit in the relationship. And they carry those skills over into finances and into child rearing and into career choices and all these other things that couples have to sort out. They have this tremendous strength. So when kids come along, mixed belief parents are even more likely than others to talk about these issues in advance and to sort out what's going to be negotiable and what's non-negotiable with the kids.
You know, speaking of kids, what do you do if the children are going to a Sunday school, for example? Like you mentioned, you didn't want your kids to be scared by fire and brimstone, but you don't always necessarily know what's going to be taught there, and the person who is the more religious of the two may just want to send the kids to that school because other friends are going there. How do you deal with your kids, who tend to be significantly more black and white about things, and what they're coming home with?
Yeah, well, what you try to do, what I suggest and what a lot of religious and non-religious parents alike are perfectly supportive of, is building a critical thinking foundation in kids right from the earliest age. Age 2 or 3 or 4, you're looking at the world, wondering about the world, and trying to think as well as you can about the world so that you can figure it out. If you get kids addicted to curiosity very early on, you find that it comes back again and again as a very useful thing to tap. So when I certainly had my kids come home and say, you know, my daughter at one point had 3 of her friends all at once, you know, when they found out she didn't go to church, said, "Oh gosh, you're going to hell." This is the first time that she had actually heard that from the outside. But the fortunate thing is that we'd already talked about this idea at home and dismissed it as something that was silly, you know, that was not even worth considering, that even if God exists, is the way I put it, I don't think he would think this up. This is something that people thought up. So we were able to take what I consider to be a very poisonous idea and get it out of the way so that she could even-handedly consider other religious ideas and other non-religious ideas. You always want to get those negatives out of the way in advance so that the first time they hear it from the outside isn't the first time they've heard it at all. If you prepare them with that critical thinking foundation and sort of inoculate them against some of those really frightful ideas, they can weather those perfectly well.
Are there any obstacles, though, that come up as far as people getting in the middle and sort of inflicting their views on the couple?
Whether they should be married?
About their various religious beliefs or varying religious beliefs.
Once in a while, you'll get that sort of pressure from the outside, whether it's family or community, friends, and so on. One of the most important things for the couple to do is early on simply decide that they're on each other's side. And this is something my wife and I did very well from the beginning, is that neither one of us was going to tolerate anyone on the outside bullying or speaking ill of a partner. You know, we were united on that. So we were fortunate to not have a lot of family pressure or anything like that. But when people do intervene, when they do, come and in many cases, I've heard stories of, you know, trying to really come between the partners in a couple. It's really up to the couple to have decided in advance that they are a unit, that they are, even if they disagree on beliefs, they're going to stick up for each other in that situation.
Dale McGowan is the author of In Faith and In Doubt, How Religious Believers and Non-Believers Can Create Strong Marriages and Loving Families. Dale, fascinating as always. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You must be your fairy godmother. Yes.
It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Many parents miss the important step of booster seats.
Maybe you better explain things to him.
Booster seats raise your child up so that a safety belt designed for adults will fit and protect them properly.
Oh, that does make a difference.
Remember that 4'9" is the magic number, and get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Hop in, my dear.
Oh, thank you.
And like Cinderella, you can live happily ever after.
It's like a dream, a wonderful dream come true.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and it's time for another Parents at Play segment. And Sam Fuse is here, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about things that you can do to keep those little hands busy. And some of them are indoor-outdoor, and some of them are just plain outdoor. But talk to us about the mini-golf set. I actually got two of those. It looked like a lot of fun.
They are a lot of fun. I think probably most children love mini-golf. And this was fun because you can keep it at home, set it up in the backyard, and it's all foam, so there's no injury involved. Still, I wouldn't advise indoor play, sir, so don't get carried away.
I'm leaving that one alone.
They're really easy to set up. My son was able to do everything by himself. It's circus-themed, so there's animals, clowns, things like that, and you can set it up any way you'd like, and you just kind of take one of the little putters and you play just like you would with regular mini-golf, only, you know, in your backyard.
And these are from our friends at Alex Toys. So what about Barbie?
Well, Barbie can't play. She's not a person.
No, she can't. Well, she can't use a golf set either, but she can design her own fashions.
She could design the golf outfit.
And I got to say, that looked really, really interesting. I did get that and took a look at it. It seemed like a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. We borrowed one of my friend's daughters and let her go crazy on the Barbie fashion design maker doll. It's one of the new Mattel dolls. The way it works is it comes with the Barbie's shoes, and sheets of printable fabric, and a bunch of accessories like glitter, ruffles, and portfolios. And when she's all done making her design, she can store it and, you know, try to get on Project Runway later on.
How does it work with the printable stuff?
You design these outfits online, print it out, and you can do it up to 8 times. And you peel off the back like a sticker of the printable fabric, put it right on Barbie.
So it's thin enough that it goes through your printer like a regular piece of paper.
Right.
Excellent. Well, speaking of patience and things that you're gonna need a lot of technology for, yeah, actually, you don't need that much technology for it, but the Z-Line Ninjas playset sounded just absolutely...
Those were so much fun.
Incredible, yeah.
Yes, those were a lot of fun. They zip around the room. It's compatible with nearly any Ninja Turtle or any Ninja Turtle figurine. It doesn't have to be a turtle. It could be any of them. And you just hook it up to the wall and hook up your Ninja Turtle and zoom them around.
And they're zip lines.
Yeah, they're real zip lines. It's easy to move and it doesn't damage the walls. They're super easy to install. I actually did it, so we know that it's fully...
So we know it's very easy, yes.
There's a bunch of different ones. There's a New York City backdrop. There's a sewer one. And they come in different prices. They go from $20 up to $30 for the more elaborate ones. And they're really easy to move around. So let's say you set it up for your 5-year-old, and then when he is like 8, you know, the height difference has changed, move it. Or
yeah, exactly.
Let's say you set it up for your 5-year-old and your 2-year-old is doing damage, you can move it just a little higher, you know. So it's super easy.
If you haven't already done so, please take a couple of minutes and visit parentsatplay.com. We've got all sorts of reviews of toys and games and lots of other activities that you can do with your kids. Again, parentsatplay.com. Till next week, I'm Armin Brott.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.